woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Giants. I'm Tom Holley, Mr. Mel Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures up 475. Dow Futures up 25. NASDAQ Futures up 20. As we, as we continue to, we cannot sell off. Yesterday looked like we might sell off a couple times. We cannot do it. I mean, everybody is absolutely convinced now. No protection needed. The White House has made a deal with the Fed that the market goes up forever, and
my 401k likes it.
Yeah,
so
so far. Oh, so do my clients, and especially some of the new clients that were really sniveling over the last quarter of last year. But now the idea is it's almost all forgotten, and whatever. And, you know, it's there was a time, and Kevin, when I first started the business, the people who were, some of the smartest guys I know in the business, I remember somebody would try and, like, mess with the market, the Fed or whoever, for a few days. They really believed that nobody was bigger than the market. And if it was held up for a little while, it just means, or if it was held down for a little while, it just means that the reaction to it would be just more brutal when it happened, whatever way it was. And when, the market was held down for a long time by 15%, retail interest rates and so forth, it just meant that the shoot up when it happened was going to be brutal, and it was. Not brutal, it was pretty darn good if you were long. But now I think that, people feel that this is kind of forever. That it's, you know, it's become the government's job to make sure that the wealthy are protected and the wealthy are in the market, and people in 401ks, not just the wealthy, but, and that this is a national treasure. Now there's enough of me as thinks there's still enough of a free market left that any type of mispricing will the market deal with in its own good time. I may turn out to be wrong. Maybe they have figured it out. Maybe the Fed can keep it. Now I was just reading an article this morning in Bloomberg. Powell is, they call it now this. Whites of the eyes approach in terms of inflation, which Powell, I claim, is different than Yellen. She wanted to anticipate inflation and cut it off at the pass, even with the really, I'll call them stupid numbers that they're dealing with out of the CPI. Now they're looking where they're not going to deal with it unless they deal with it, because we're actually over 2% now if you look at the last few months. But now they still don't see wage inflation. They don't see this. I'm gonna say, based on the 60s and 70s history, if you take that approach, you're gonna run us down a rat hole. That's just the wrong approach. Kevin, how's that to start our morning?
Good morning to you too.
Yeah.
How about those Cubs?
How about those Cubs? How about Mr. Quintana? He's gonna save the day, huh?
Well, Quintana pitched well, before he, got the hamstring strain. You remember his name.
Lester.
Lester, thank you.
Yeah.
You know, this is usually Friday, me losing names. And, yeah. You know, it's only Tuesday, and or Wednesday, and I'm losing them. I'm losing days, too. Lester was pitching pretty well, and Hamels has been okay. So, Cubs are starting to show signs of life, but I digress. So where were we? What were?
No, I was just saying that the.
Were we discussing?
I'm saying I think if the Fed waits until everybody in the world agrees there's inflation, if they, in other words, if they wait until the current CPI numbers, the way they do it, shows like 3%, and they've soaked it too much. I all of a sudden I think Kevin, we're going to need 7-8% rates to pull it back, and that's not where we want to go. I don't know.
Has there ever been a bubble that didn't burst?
No.
Okay. Well. So
but we're sneaking up on this one.
Try to be the one who can predict.
What else
can you do?
Yeah, but that's no fun.
I know.
It's fun for
unless you have a vote over how this is done, we can observe, we can warn. You know, you can do all kinds of things, but there isn't much else you can do.
There's just a few things that you thought in your lifetime that were so devastating to so many people that you'd never even think you're going to go back there, and yet
we will.
Yeah, and yet we will. But you know, the weird part of it, Kevin, is last time. I don't know if you recall. I know your dad was not around, but your mom was, and I'll bet she had a few shekels. I don't think she was a wealthy lady, but she had a few shekels. She was like my mom. And the last time this happened, the saver class, the middle class, when you worked, you had enough money. Let's start from the beginning. I honestly don't know anybody right now, the people that are in the 50, 60, $70,000 a year range that have a family. I don't know any of those people. They might have some. Maybe if they're lucky, they have a 401k someplace. But I don't know any of those people that are out of their, you know, $500 paycheck every 2 weeks, they're putting 100 in the bank. I don't know a soul that can do that. That's doing the 15, 20% in the bank routine. Where in our parents' generation, that was somewhat routine, correct? You really didn't have 401ks. You didn't have IRAs. You were supposed to save, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so people put their dough in the bank. So I'm going to say that when I was in college and with you, and later, my first 5 years in the business, certainly on the trading floor, when interest rates were 14, 15%, your mom, my mom, and everybody else's mom at our age or dad was able to put their money in the and save in a bank account and get at least the inflation plus a bit. So inflation was 12%, they were able to get 14 or something. So the interest rates that you received on your saved money was in fact the inflation rate plus some interest. That will not happen this time. If all of a sudden you have people where you've got real inflation rates of 5, 6, 7%, and you could make an argument for that right now, certainly in certain pockets of society. They have a lot of money on prescription drugs or kids in school and so forth. And you're getting 1% in the bank. The world is diametrically different. Diametrically different. And I can't even imagine. It's almost gonna be very much like a Mexican, devaluation of the peso. Where every poor bastard in Mexico that's got his money in the bank and doesn't know it's coming and doesn't pull his money overseas that night and put it in dollars when they devalue the peso 20%, and then the other guy brings his dollars back and now is 20% richer than his neighbor. It's going to be just like that, Kevin. It's totally different to the worse if it happens again than in the 70s and 80s. Now, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it makes sense. What the difference probably in the time is that there are accessible alternatives outside of the banking system.
Like what?
Which doesn't mean that's good. It just means it exists. And so, you know, I think we will see, we will see an exodus of money out of the system.
Into what?
I don't know. Lending funds that are not non-bank lenders, as an example.
There's going to be some of our clients and people that we know that I'll use the term are smart enough to do that. But every man is not going to flee the FDIC insurance. We've been trained to trust the system. That's what
banks, how many thousands of people have put money into Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies?
A lot.
Speculatively,
a lot.
Yeah. I think it's more than you think.
Okay, but your mom or my mom in those days probably was not going to go outside the system.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's one thing that's changed, is that there will be alternatives outside the system. They will be riskier. People will lose a lot of money in it. People will make money in it. People will make more money than they'd make in their banks in it. But I don't know it sort of depends on when the bubble actually does decide to burst. If it's going to burst next year, there's going to be a different behavior than if it bursts 5 years from now.
Could we possibly, after the Great Depression, when the banks closed their doors on people, and the New Deal came in, and they put the banking system back together with the FDIC insurance and the FSLIC insurance and so forth, for the last 85 years, or however long that's been, 1932, 33, so that would be 85 years, right? That's not so bad. The last 85 years, we've managed to pour trust in our banking system for most people. Do we really want to go and destroy that? No other place on earth has ever had the trust in the banking system where we're to loan most of the loans, most everything the Fed can control has happened within that system, and it's been pretty solid except for Volcker screwing up with the resolution trust, the savings and loan. It's been fairly solid for a real long period of time. Do we really want to believe
that? No. Is that going to be an unintended consequence of the way they're managing the economy right now? Could be.
Well, Kevin, those have devastating, I don't believe, and Steph and I were talking about the other day, and she wants to have a show on it, or a segment on it. I don't believe we have recovered yet from the FSL savings and loan crisis. You look at the way the mortgages are done now and the insanity of it. I use the terms Greg and Audrey try and save this townhome for some lady who's, very ill and so forth, and they're doing their good deed. They've messed with this bank, and I won't say the name, for a year and a half, Kevin, bleeping around off a short sale, and can't find somebody to talk to, can't talk to the same person twice. That would never have happened in a savings and loan 40 years ago. Never. There'd be a person to talk to, you'd get a decision, bad or good, and then off you'd go. The incredible inefficiency of the current system with the, there's mortgages all over the place, nobody knows who they are, nobody knows who the owners are, nobody knows of the mortgage, I mean. and everybody you talk to is some bureaucrat that God knows what they're even hired, why they've been hired. The incredible inefficiency of the system, I'm surprised it's not falling apart now. For people who try to use it, it has fallen apart. The banks don't do more.
But I'm telling you, it also, it wouldn't, I tweeted the other day at you guys, we have two locally owned banks here that are of significant size, First Source and Centere, and they, they're both locally owned. They've been around forever. One of them, I think First Source is probably $6 billion in assets, and Centere runs something like $4 billion. So you're talking about big enough to have a presence and to have a commercial presence, and yet you do have access to people there, and then there's tons of credit unions thriving in this area. I think part of it is there are some parts of the country that are just not served.
Yeah, why do you suppose
with those kinds of institutions there, and Chicago being one of them, and there are other parts of the country that are very well served?
Why do you suppose? And when I say this, okay, I'm saying this because the people that people deal with, but if you had a mortgage, Kevin, though, probably 4 years into it, it's changed 2-3 times. We're the thing. You don't even know where your mortgage is. You'll know where your servicer is.
Yeah, as long as you have access to your servicer, you should be fine.
But I'm saying if your servicer happens to be Wells Fargo, because,
Then you're screwed.
Then you're screwed. But yeah, you know.
But usually the originator keeps servicing.
I don't know about that. Well, anyway, why do you suppose, when you and I talk about this, the fact is, when I bank...
Let me rephrase that. If your originator is a bank, it'll keep servicing. If it's a mortgage company, it probably won't.
Right. So, why is it that I do my stuff at Lakeside, and I have my personal bank at Lakeside. They're terrific. Around the neighborhood here in downtown Chicago, there's probably, three or four banks, and if you go to the south side, the best was, there was an outfit called Beverly Bank. They got bought by, I don't know who the hell they got bought by, but they got bought by two or three people, and now it's like closed. Who were the guys that had the real Bank of New York, or somebody, or Old Canada, they got bought by somebody. And, so the people went down the block, Kevin, and they opened up a storefront. We're in 30 feet of the Rock Island stop on 103rd Street. And all the people who used to do their stuff through Beverly, put their money, they were the same cashiers. I mean, you can still open a bank. In the Chicago area, in Illinois, it's easy to open a bank. And when I say easy, I mean $3-4 million, Kevin, we can open a bank here pretty easily. Now, how many loans are going to be given out, or whether we just kick our money up the chain, for a while we probably won't be given that many loans, but we can grow. We can be a deposit bank, do service for people. I'm going to say within 3 years, they were able to buy a corner at 63rd or 103rd and Western and build a serious building. That's how much money they made. The guys who bought First National Bank, my mom didn't like the new people. They were Old Kent, and then they became Fifth Third. They opened up a spot half a block down, half a mile down. Same people, Evergreen Park Community Bank. Within 6 months, they were incredibly viable. So, but I don't think that happens around the rest of the country. Why? What makes? I know Illinois was the last state to go branch banking, but why is your area so vibrant? Was Michigan late to go branch banking as well, or what?
No, and actually, what I was describing was Indiana Bank. So,
maybe they might have been.
You know, they've had the big dogs too have been around, and the usual players are in here. I don't think you don't see as much Wells Fargo lately as there's not as many Wells Fargo branches as they used to be, but they earned that. You get your Chases, and I think Bank of America has a commercial lending office here. I don't think they have a branch anymore. But the big players are in there. Part of it is culture, that the local culture supports local business. And it's that way in the small business community too. So it's not just a banking phenomenon. But I think what do people want? And ultimately, if you have something good for consumers, they will buy.
Well, but you're not going to. But here's my concern with the inflation is, the last time there was a lot of inflation, and I'm not predicting. I'm saying if you don't watch it, it'll come back. It always does. But and I'm not accusing the Fed of totally sleeping on the job either. I'm just saying if you let it get ahead of you, it's hard to chase, because once it's got the camel's got his nose under the tent, the rest of the body follows. But I'm just saying that there were processes in place last time, Kevin, to blunt the effects of it for certain people, and not for other people, because I was on the basically ass end of this, because I was not a union worker at Pullman. So my 5% raise, which was the best allegedly any salaried person got, was not so hot when inflation was 12%. And I was the guy who was doing the calculations for the unions, and they didn't get the full inflation, but they got like 80% of it plus like other raises. So if the inflation was 12%, everybody in the plant got a 10% raise, but I didn't. So the unions had it. But I'm saying the savers in the 70s and 80s were essentially came out whole. They got the inflation plus, the real rate of interest, which is, say, 2.5% or something. Because the inflation got to, 12%? And I'm going to say Robin and my mother got 15.5% was the top they ever got. So it was always a little ahead of the inflation. So there were pockets of society that weren't there. But now, I'm saying if it happens this time, think about it. If we go to a 6 or 7% real inflation, which again, some people think we are there, if we really go there, say 10%, if we go off the chart, and you're still making 1.5 or 2 in the bank, what does that do to your savings? That's essentially a currency devaluation. That didn't happen last time. But all the hints point to, if we go down that road again, you're not going to be whole with your money. Now, some will say, put it in the market, you'll for sure make enough there. I don't know if I buy that either. No, so your wealth is not, shall we say, well, if it happens again, your wealth will not be sacred this time. Is that a fair way to say it, in my opinion?
Yeah, that probably is a reasonable way to say it. And did we not find that last time?
Savers, no. We've been savers. The people got clocked were the people who were in the market. The market was down 20%. It was down from 1,000 before this all started. And when I started in the business, it was about 800. Which doesn't sound like much, but 20% is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what's interesting? Of course, I was only, at the time, Kevin, it was, let's put it this way. I have no real way to judge because I was not an expert on the whole market. Expert, no, there's a word. Because the options industry, which I was in, only had 125 stocks, and no indices. But none of those stocks went out of business. So the top companies somehow had learned to deal with it. They weren't doing very well, but they stayed in business. Now there's, you know, thousands of optionable stocks, so I don't know how many of the stocks that my clients have would not survive something like that. I mean, in those days, stocks got pretty low, but they at least, I can't really tell you, I mean, it's a long time ago, but sometime we'll have Dr. J. I don't remember any of those, of the stocks that were on the Florida CBOE when I started going under because of the inflation issue. I mean, they were low, but they didn't go under. And, I don't know this time. I mean, that's the one part when people say they have diversified portfolios. And whenever anybody says to me, my portfolio is diversified, I tell a story about what would have happened if somebody would have wandered into PTI 5 years ago or 8 years ago, and here's my portfolio. And it would have been General Motors, United Airlines, Kmart, Sears, Citigroup, Bear Stearns. I would have said, that's a nice portfolio. Oops. Now they're not, none of them are around.
Oops, it's not. Well, you know, you sort of need the magic quadrant of companies if you really want to know where your money should park. And I know we're up on break, so Matty knows what the magic quadrant.
Matty can name the 10 country companies. He can name
the
10.
We just got we just got added to the magic quadrant.
Ah, nice job. Okay, so we'll talk about that when we come back.
We'll be right back. SB Futures still up 5. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters. the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Man, we're on the board of Mr. Kevin O'Neill. We have Morgan Stanley is up $1.33 as they beat on earnings with they beat estimates on wealth management, charge people a lot. And trading. So they did better, evidently, on their trading than Goldman Sachs did, but they're, I don't think it's as big as their piece of their company as Goldman Sachs. But so anyway, they were up $1.33 this morning. S&P futures now up 650, NASDAQ futures up 26.75, Dow's up 31. Interesting, other stocks in the Dow, we got IBM down 360, because their earnings were, they actually beat, but people didn't like it, trading 141.50, and they're the biggest mover in the Dow this morning. Or to the downside, so the Dow's not up as much as the rest of the market. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 33, up small every day over in the DAX. 0.3%, FTSE down 6, call that flat. CAC around up 12.2%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 56.2%. Hang Seng down 5, call that flat. Shanghai up 9.3%. Not much going on over in Asia this morning. We've got oil to the upside, 35 cents. Brent, 40 cents, 64.40 and 72.12. So that's, is that $7.70? Natural gas, 2.57. That's as low as we've seen that in a while. RBOB back up to 204. It dipped down to $2, but it's up to 204. Gold, we got gold up $1.60, but still it's 12.78. It's been, we'll see if it holds there. I don't know if it will or not. It's near 4 month low. Silver, 14.96. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways for the second day in a row after a pretty horrific Monday yesterday, and so far today we're looking pretty good out there. One issue to report that's obviously a significant one, we had a fatal accident earlier this morning that's blocking the two right lanes on the Tri-State Tollway southbound just before the Bishop Ford. An SUV is now on a tow truck, but solid traffic as crews investigate that and get that cleared up. So expect delays for up to, probably the rest of the morning as they continue to investigate and get that situation resolved. That was a fatal crash blocking the two right lanes on the Tri-State southbound just east of the Bishop Ford Expressway. No issues coming in on the Ryan or I-57. Stevenson traffic starting to build, but no accidents. Same for the Eisenhower. Edens and Kennedy looking good. Everything else is nice and quiet. No issues on the tollways and the highways. Everything looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds. Could have some rain, especially to the north later on this afternoon and early evening. We'll reach a high of 63, warmer inland. Right now it is overcast and 48 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 81 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 57. In sports, the White Sox have now won 4 out of 5. They took care of the Royals last night down at Guaranteed Rate. 5-1 was the final in that one. Cubs have won 4 out of 5 as well and 6 out of 9 as they got a back-to-back shutout from Jose Quintana in consecutive starts. They took care of the Marlins 4-0 down in Miami. And the Diamondbacks beat the Braves in Atlanta 9-6. Chief.
So who are their surprises this year so far? Good and bad.
Who's surprised?
Base the ball.
Oh, what teams are off to good starts? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, the Bo Sox are not. You know what? I've had enough of Boston.
Yeah, I've.
I wonder if that has to do with which Triple E taps you hang out at.
Yes.
So the big surprise in baseball, for my money, has been the Tampa Bay Rays. They're 13-4. They're leading the AL East by 5.5 games right now over the Yankees, 7.5 over the Red Sox, who are 6-12. They've been the other big surprise to the other direction. In the AL Central, the Indians are 10-7. No surprise there. The AL Central's not very good, but the Indians are the favorite to win that. And then the Astros are leading the West after Seattle got off to a big time start. They've actually dropped 5 in a row, and the Astros have won 10 in a row. So, now have a half-game lead over Seattle in the American League West. National League, no team has been great. The Brewers have the best record in the National League at 12-6, but they were projected to be a favorite. Cubs certainly got off to a slow start, but they seem to be riding that ship as their pitching's been getting better. They've been hitting all year, but their pitching's finally getting better.
At one point, they tied a record for most games in, the first 10, 15, or 20. Over 5 runs, and they lost all of them. Over half of them.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say those are the surprises.
Their pitching's come around, and if they get their bullpen, their bullpen back in order with the people that they already have on the roster, they'll be fine. They'll be good. Now whether will they be better than the Brewers and better than the Cardinals? Both of those are pretty good teams too.
Believe it or not, and I look at this, some people disregard it, but I think it does matter. The Cubs are 7-9, but their run differential is already plus 12, whereas the Brewers are 12-6, and their run differential is plus 1, meaning that they're winning a lot of one-run games, and the Cubs are even though they're under 500, they're blowing teams out. That usually evens out over the course of the season, and if you score a lot more runs than you allow, then you're going to win a lot more games. So I would anticipate the Cubs are going to make some noise in the division.
So you think that?
I don't even think the Cubs have everybody going offensively either. So
Well, yeah, Bryant, Rizzo, and Schwarber have been non-existent for the most part, and that's your core. That's the core of your offense outside of Baez. And they haven't done anything anywhere close to their standards. So if those guys even get back to their average seasons, then the Cubs are really going to be scary on offense.
And as you look at it, I'm looking at it right now. The Cubs have scored 97 runs. The Brewers have scored 96. And as bad as the Cubs' pitching has been, the Brewers have given up 95 runs.
So you guys think that men left on the bases should be a plus?
What does that have
who
to
said,
do with run
who
differential?
Said that? When you're scoring a lot of runs, you're leaving fewer men on the bases.
That's possible.
It's likely.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about you need to score runs when you need to score runs.
You need to score runs, period.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
And we're saying that they're scoring a lot of runs. The problem is that their pitching has been horrible.
When the Stacks and Jack softball team is up by 10 and somebody decides then to hit the home run, all he's doing is keeping us from the bar. He's not helping us. Just saying.
Okay.
Well, over the course of the season, you want everyone to try to score runs throughout the game, whether it's a close game, whether it's a blowout, you want runs scored.
I would agree. But
and,
my point,
and that's what they're doing well. You also want to keep the opponent from scoring runs, and that's what they're not doing well.
I was watching the game the other night. I mean, my big bitch with the Cubs for the last few years, as good a ball player as they have, and as likable as a team as it is.
And they've been the best team in baseball for 5 years.
I love their inability to score runs in close games is their Achilles heel. And it has been in the playoffs the last 3 years. They have been times where you watch them, and this is not just them. I mean, that's what the Red Sox last year were better than any team at. Men at second and third, one out, they will not put the bat on the ball. Somebody will go up there in his third strike swing. The other night when they were playing in the rain someplace, it was the White Sox.
I'll give you a good example of that though. I think was it Sunday? Whatever the game where they, or maybe Saturday, the game where they were coming from behind. They were
Saturday.
Trying to come from behind, and they left the winning run at third. And Schwarber got called out on a swing that really wasn't.
Yeah, that was a horrible call.
Which was a horrible call. But the bad part wasn't the Schwarber at bat; it was the Contreras at bat ahead of it, because he had the man the tying run on third with one out. All he really needed to do was put his bat on the ball, and not, you know, anything other than a pop up probably would have gotten the run home. And he chased two pitches, you know, 1 8 inches out of the strike zone, followed by 1 12 inches out of the strike zone.
Full swing.
That was a god awful at bat in a situation, you know, chasing crap when you really need.
And the man's an all star.
And that happens, but that was a terrible at bat. Yes, and you have to minimize those terrible at bats, but. I don't know that many hitters have terrible at bats in just those situations and no others. They are who they are.
That's true.
And so some I'd rather see coming up in a you know, I'd rather see Ben Zobrist coming up in that situation because I know he will give me a good at bat.
But I mean, I guess what's happened,
that at bat was absolutely brutal.
But yeah, what I'm saying is in the course of 160.
You know, I always tell in my classes, I always tell people there's two things that offend me. Bad management and bad baseball. That was bad baseball.
I just think in a 162 game season, you have bad weather days, you have slump days, you have stuff. It's really, really tough. But winning the 2-1 game is an art. And the Cubs have not found a way to do yet. I mean, because they can't. Once in a while, you need the walk, the stolen base, the two hopper to second, and the sacrifice fly where the pitcher goes, what the bleep just happened? How'd they get that run? I haven't seen the Cubs do that in 5 years.
I have.
When?
What, you want a date?
When was the last time you...
I would say, first of all, the Cubs have more wins than any team since 2015, including a World Series, including four straight playoff appearances. You said they haven't done it in 3 years. 3 years ago, they won the World Series. So whatever they did 3 years ago was good. The last year in the playoffs and at the end of the season, you're right. They could not manufacture a run to save their life. And that left a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths. And you're right about that. And we can point to individual games, just like Saturday's game, like that Kevin brought up, where all you have to do is put the bat on the ball. But you have to compare it to the rest of Major League Baseball. You don't compare it to the perfect at bat or, you know, the game that you saw in 1987. I mean, you got to compare it to the rest of Major League Baseball. They've won more games than anyone since 2015, which is a pretty large sample size.
I understand
now, 4.5 years. And so it's to say that they're completely, you know, failing at that is just wrong.
My point is that other teams talent-wise have now caught them. The first year that they won the World Series, the talent that popped out, they didn't have any injuries. They had what's his name, the guy who's still pitching like a madman. He got his 100th victory the other night or something.
Arrieta.
Jake Arrieta had probably the best.
That was 2015.
Okay, but the next year he still was pretty darn good.
Yeah, he was good.
But I mean, he put them over the top. He had probably two of the best years that we've seen since Gibson was alive, for God's sake, right? I mean, I don't
16, he really wasn't as good. He was still very good, but I mean, he wasn't even Yeah, he wasn't even their best starter, I would argue, in the playoffs in 2016. 2015, though, he was unhittable.
But he brought them into the – he got them all the way through to the National League championship the year before, right?
Yes, I would agree.
But he was ungodly.
In the second half of that season,
he was ungodly. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anybody better. That half of the season, he was better than Maddox. He was better than anybody I've ever seen. I mean, I never saw a guy aim for the middle of the plate and the ball dance to the sides – and nobody knew which way it was dancing, and they had no idea how to hit it. I don't think I've ever seen anybody quite like that. Where he basically...
He had a 15-start run where he had like a 1.3 ERA or something.
And he had more late movement than anybody I've ever seen, including Greg Maddux. And the batters were shaking. My point is that last night, they played a good ball game. They won. Everybody's having a beer. Everybody's happy. But me being the manager that I always am for every softball team, I look at Contreras' at bat. Somebody gets on base, the guy's asked to bunt. They just spent 10 weeks in spring training for pitchers. He missed both bunt attempts by a foot and a half, and then swung at one that he missed by 2 feet. A pitcher has got to touch the damn thing. He's trying to bunt it. I mean, what if that was the World Series, and all of a sudden these guys came back for 3 runs in the next inning? That's what lost your game right there.
I didn't see that bat you're talking about, but yeah, you're probably right. I mean, and asking a guy that doesn't bunt well to bunt is probably bad managing.
No, I'm talking about the pitcher. That's all pitchers do.
Oh, Quintana?
Yeah, Quintana.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a pitcher struck out.
What I'm saying, he was up there to bunt.
That never happens.
But, I mean, what does a pitcher do in spring training all day?
If that's your bitch, then yeah, I can't argue. There's nothing I can say
about that. What I'm saying about Maddie is, what do pitchers do in spring training for 10 weeks?
Suck at hitting.
But they learn how to bunt.
Yes, but they don't always get it down.
I'm saying he looked like it was the first time he ever did it.
I mean, Lester is our best bunter. And he's one of the best in the game. Hendricks is solid, and the rest of them are bad at it. I mean, it's. I don't think it's that easy.
I didn't say nothing in the Major League Baseball is easy. God, see,
you're complaining about a pitcher striking out right now.
What I'm talking about is
in a 4-0 win.
He had no fundamentals, and he didn't come within a foot of it. I'm not talking about he fouled a couple off. He was close. We're not even talking about. Manny, if the bat was 4 times bigger, he wouldn't have hit it, touched it.
Yeah, I can't worry about pitchers.
But I'm saying these are.
Tom, I hear what you're saying. I'd like to see him get the bunt down. On the other hand, you do have to understand that the guy spent his whole career until coming to the Cubs,
right?
Not batting, not bunting, not doing any of it, because you come through the whole minor league system using a designated hitter. Some of these guys are just going to be terrible, and they're not going to be particularly trainable.
And only Chief is negative enough to rip a guy that pitched a 7-inning shutout in back-to-back starts because he didn't lay a bunt down in the fifth inning.
What my point is, Matty, is that that's what I watched. As you know, I watched the Red Sox more than I would like.
More than
a healthy person would. But last year, I was so impressed with that team because they had.
They never bunted, I can tell you that.
They legitimate stars. Oh, yeah, they did. Anytime they were asked to bunt, anytime they were asked to do anything, they were very fundamentally sound. I saw guys give up the two-hopper to second base, the right-handed batter, to move a guy from second to third. I never seen the Cubs do that. I mean, I'm saying they were more fundamentally sound than virtually any other team. And even though they had stars and were really good, that probably earned them an extra 6-7 games a year last year. They still would have won if they just went up there banging because they were that good. But they were fundamentally very sound. And they weren't upset when you asked them. I mean, ask Ernie Banks when he was still alive, if they asked you to bunt, what would you do? He goes, I'd bunt. It's a situation I'd bunt. But how many guys now would make a total ass of themselves up there just so they were never asked to do it again? It's just different. What I'm saying is those 5 or 6 games that you can steal are big games. How many times in softball,
Tom, no argument on that, and I agree with you on style of play. You know, I want good situational hitting, and I don't see enough of it, but I'm not sure that there are many teams where I see enough of it. And there's some really good teams that just don't, you know, that's not what they do. There are some stat hounds who think, you know, no, you should just be up there doing your regular thing. But, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, I there are times when I want somebody hitting the right side. If you hit it out of the park to the right side, cool. You know, if you, well, if you, if you, you know, if you get a double down the line or into the gap, cool. But you know, I'm not saying give yourself up, but I am saying, you know, I need the ball on the right side because I have a leadoff double and I need a run.
Well, the best
so,
of bad.
Yeah, that's good fundamental baseball, and I'm all on board with that. I'm totally on board with that, and I would like to see the Cubs be better at it. I would like to see pretty much all baseball teams be better at it.
The best at bat this year with
the better game.
The one I remember is Rizzo had two strikes on him, and he got the big full shift on. Some guy wings one on the outside corner. He just like reached out, almost he'd have been called like a half swing in softball, and just whacked it down the third baseline. There was nobody there. Rolled all the way to the wall.
So not.
Oh yeah. Hey, you know what? If you threw that shift at me, I'd take the gimme hit almost every time.
Yep.
It would have to be a situation where it says, no, that's not the smart play. But otherwise, yeah, I'm going to make you move back.
Not to bring facts, yeah. Not to bring facts to the argument, because I hate to do that, but successful sacrifices in 2018 by team. It's average per game. The most was by Cincinnati. They did it 0.3 times per game successfully. They were one of the worst teams in baseball. The Red Sox, who Chief thought were good at that, they're 27th out of 30th.
Your American League team is not going to have to sacrifice as much as the National League.
Exactly, team. That was my point.
Yeah.
They don't bunt at all. The other teams that were the Cubs, for example, you would think they'd be bad at that. They were 6th in all of baseball. They were one of the best. They did it. In my opinion, they do it too often. I would rather not give up the out. The Dodgers did it 7th. They were a very good team, so there's some good teams that did it a lot, the Cubs and the Dodgers. But the teams that made the playoffs that don't do it at all, Oakland, Boston, the Yankees, Houston.
Yeah, but nobody in the American League, why would you?
I know, that's my point. Why would you? So you're saying you saw them do it all the time. They didn't.
Right, I saw them cut back on the swing on third strike, and I saw the right
hand. You said you saw them sacrifice all the time.
They
didn't.
When I mean a sacrifice, it's sort of a sacrifice to hit the ball to the right side with somebody on second base and nobody out.
And there is a time for that, but I think I don't like to give up free outs. I want guys trying to get hits.
Hitting the ball to the right side, you'd rather have it go through.
Of course.
But the last thing you want
a guy hit the ball in the gap.
Yeah, but the last thing you want is the two-hopper to short. If you get the two-hopper, hit the two-hopper to
second. The guy's already in scoring position at second base.
Okay.
So I'd rather have the guy try to get a base hit and not give up an out. And he's probably going to score from second anyway. I don't understand giving up an out to get 90
feet. There's some stats there about probability of scoring if you're on second base with nobody out versus third base with one out. And I think and it does go up if you're on third base with one out.
But here's the stat. You stat hoons. By the way, is your dog a hund? Is he a hound at all? Or what is
I don't know. He kind of howls like one sometimes, but he's a terrier lab from what we know.
I think, you know what, we may have to kick in some cash and get a DNA test.
I think it's like $100. I'm going to do it someday.
Because that'll be an interesting thing. The thing will be about 4 feet long, first of all. But here's the stat we're looking for, or I would be looking for. In all the years that people have essentially hit the ball to the right side on purpose to move a guy over, what is their batting average versus just swinging away? I don't know if it's that much different. If it is, then I'm with you, but how does anybody know? There's a stat that has probably not ever been
considered. Oh, that is knowable if anybody wants to do the research if it hasn't been done already.
How do you know when somebody did it on purpose?
I don't know. Nowadays, I think you pretty much know if it happens, it probably was done on purpose.
But you're asking for
high probability that it was done on purpose too. So I don't know, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
But you can come up with some decent assumptions that everybody will agree are reasonable. So that part of it is doable. Look, I'm a fan of that kind of baseball, but I don't want to, like Matt said, I don't like to give up the out.
No, I don't either.
But what I do want to be able to do, and I would almost never bunt if I had a. If I could count on my guy to put his bat on the ball, I'd put runners on the move more often.
I like that too, and they executed a beautiful hit and run last night with Baez running, he went first to third on a hit and run. Now to the one stat the Cubs were horrible at in 2018 that we would all like them to get better at is runners left in scoring position. They were worst in baseball at stranding runners in scoring position. Now, that's obviously a two-part stat. One, they had a ton of guys in scoring position, So that's a good thing. You're trying to get bases any way you can, but they were not getting the big hit or the big two-out
hit. The stat there I'd like to see, Matty, is not whether you get a guy in scoring position, is did you whiff? If you put the bat on the ball, I'm not as mad.
Well, I just want you to get a hit. And the Dodgers were also really bad at that. They made the playoffs. Atlanta was really bad at that. They made the playoffs. Boston was really bad at that.
The Dodgers had overriding talent, though. I mean,
right. Boston was 22nd out of 30 in that. My point is I think that when you get a lot of guys on base, you leave a lot of guys on base.
Well, I found out in all the years we played
softball. Well, I don't want to know the sheer number of guys left on base. What I really want to know is the percentage of guys in scoring position that are left on base.
Well, I'll make this statement, Kevin, and I doubt if you'll disagree.
Which I'm sure I could find.
All the years that we played softball, the better team we had, the less, the more we could bleep up fundamentally and still win.
That's true.
I mean, because if you're the exact same as the other team, it's usually the least mistakes wins. If you got a better team, you don't care. You just mash them, right? Or they mash you.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
you become the Palmer Club.
So those guys, we beat them once in a while.
We used to split with them.
Yeah,
we used to play those guys once. What we're describing here is we played in the doubleheader Sunday league. So starting at noon, and so you would go around the league twice. And these guys would come out at noon so hungover from the night before that if you caught them in the noon game, you could beat them. But, boy, by the time they sweated it out a little bit and you got them in the 2 o'clock game, they were going to beat the ball.
These guys, would disdain the softball jerseys for the workout, the wife beaters, maybe. They had some. Yeah. They were some muscle.
You know how the Chicago parks are laid out, where you know sometimes the fields overlap a little bit, or you know part of the outfield will if a guy really hits one. Our right fielder Eddie went chasing down a long ball by one of these guys, and it was so far that it went to a field that was nowhere near where we were, and it's rolling up to the shortstop, and Eddie's chugging after it just to go get the ball back, and the guy picks it up, looks at him, goes, "What diamond are you on?"
We had a guy at Grant Park, Big Mike, this huge black man. He played third base. Well, he was only 5'10", but he actually was the fullback that was behind Cookie Gilchrist on whatever team that was. Was that the Houston? So he played fullback for the old AFL. Massive, you know, muscle. He airballed the field next to us over in Grant Park. He landed it in their dugout.
Yikes.
Which, I mean, it was one of the fields that was pretty tight. The wind was blowing his way, and all of a sudden the thing goes up in the air, and I go, that one's not coming down for a while. It landed over their diamond. It was, they're like, where did this one come from? Anyway, Kevin, have a good weekend, buddy. Have a nice Easter. We have no show on Friday. Who knows? Maybe we'll tap into you tomorrow. We'll see. We might have, might have Mr. Wayne on tomorrow, and one of Jessica's friends, she's a political science girl in DePaul. She's studying this stuff and wants to come out and talk about it, whatever this stuff is.
Oh, okay, well that would be cool. You got Lou tomorrow too?
Lou is he told me he's in the Fulda Gap. Do you know where the Fulda Gap is?
Sounds dirty to me.
There's a mountain range in
we had to
Germany.
Look it up too.
Yeah, we had to look it up too.
Full disclosure.
It is a mountain range in Germany, so if you're sending tanks to Frankfurt, you got to come through this valley gap like the Russians did to get to Frankfurt, and that's where Lou was, whether he was doing military research or what in God's name he's doing. But anyway, he's over there. So if you're in the Fulda Gap, look around for Lou.
So he's out tomorrow.
All right. Yeah, so I'll check when I'll look left and look right.
So do you think we can sentence this young lady to Wayne?
It could be interesting.
It would be interesting. Kevin, thank you very much. S&P Futures still up 650. NASDAQ Futures up 27. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed.
PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's john@PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening. Welcome back to Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Russell Rhodes and the phone. SP Futures now up 7.25. Dow Futures up 30. Hey, Russell, I'm grumpy this morning for two reasons. Not that you care, but I'll explain them to you.
I always care. I'll stop by and give you a hug on my way to school this morning.
Only if you're in the cardigan.
And you see, that's why I'm not there. I sent all my cardigans out because I thought cardigan season was behind us.
Do you store them somewhere, like a fur?
Exactly. They're priceless. And, you know, sometimes they're hard to even find and buy. So, yeah.
Well, you know, you
two things.
They're stored for the season.
Yeah, cardigans are never out in Chicago, except for maybe 2 months out of the year. And then the second thing would be, if you did come, we would ask that you bring a sausage McMuffin as well.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Because Farrah used to do that when he was...
Well, he goes to McDonald's for breakfast every day, and it would be nice, just one time, a sausage McMuffin. I haven't had one of those in like 15 years.
If I brought you one on the way in, I'm happy to do that next time I come.
Just one time. I'll give you a crisp $5 bill. Does that even cover it anymore?
A cardigan?
What? My breakfast meal, I've paid more attention to it because of the inflation discussions that we have. What I get is exactly $7.51.
Whoa.
And I know that they've gotten the order wrong. I know. But I know the order's wrong if the total's not right.
And what was it a year ago, roughly?
About $1 less.
So what do you get, if you don't mind me asking? That's $7.
Oh, it's just one of the meals.
Okay.
It's a sausage, biscuit, cheese, hash brown, a large Diet Coke. You know, the thing that is going to put me away 10 years earlier than I should go.
I'm going to say the average McDonald's stuff is up a minimum of 12 to 15% from last year.
What they actually did was they stopped offering the sandwich with the cheese, and they make it an add-on, and that bumped it 50 cents right there.
50 cents for a slice of cheese.
Oh my gosh!
I know. Maybe I should bring my own cheese and slap it on there in front of them.
By the way, just
the sausage, egg, and cheese biscuit is delicious, though. By the way,
it is.
It really is.
I don't get it every day. I get it a couple times a week now. I've scaled back.
Do you know? For a guy who I have access, I'm a guy to the Restaurant Depot. Right,
as is my brother. So I've been in there.
Well, I've met your brother there, and we always talk about you. So do you think he's still sleeping?
Listen, I've wielded those pull push cart things a few times.
Are those things wild or what?
Not easy to navigate it down the narrow aisles.
No. And if you try and turn them, if you don't anticipate your turn in advance, you're screwed.
Oh, and then you get the dirty looks from the other restaurant owners.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, so I buy stuff for the office, and if ever you're gonna make pesto sauce, it's the only place you can get basil enough to where it's not costing you an arm and a leg. You get a whole thing of basil for like $6, rather than $2 for two leaves anywhere else. Anyway, you know what? If you buy cheese, American cheese at the depot, what do you suppose? Well, you either get, if you buy 5 pounds of cheese, you can either get 120 slices per 5 pounds, or 160, meaning the slices are thinner. Now, I'm guessing that the McDonald's is at least in the 160 range, and I don't think their slices are as big as these.
Oh no, they're not. If I brought my own Velveeta or whatever, it would be like a double helping of their cheese.
Yeah, I mean a normal cheese slice is what?
Yeah.
2 inch by 2 inch, and I'll bet theirs is 1.5 by 1.5. Anyway,
I'll bet you, just going with the whole inflation thing, I bet they've taken an eighth of an inch off of it as they added a 50 cents to the cost.
All right, so this 5 pound brick of cheese that's sliced, that's used 160. Slice one is $10.
Mm-hmm.
So where does that put you? $10 divided by 160 is not very much, but I'll get the calculator out.
No,
that is 6 cents. So let's see, at 50 cents a slice, saying it's the same slice. Wow, that's like movie popcorn, for God's sake.
It is. Go McDonald's.
Yeah,
88% margin. Is that what that is?
Yeah.
That's
no,
nice.
No.
6 out of 50?
It's almost 1,000% margin.
Yes.
It's like
44 cents.
It's 8.5 times. So it's 850% margin.
I see.
88% would be 5 cents.
Right? That covers an awful lot of crappy little plastic toys that they give away.
Yeah, and so anyway. IBM's earnings were yesterday, and I do a lot of these for people who listen. I never tell before. I'm not going to get advice or anything, but everybody knows I like doing these earnings plays because there's weekly options. And so I was looking at IBM, and for the last, 10 earnings, we've done earnings in there, and we've gotten pretty much spanked every time because the thing opened down like a whole $5 or something. Well, a couple times it was $6 or $7. So every time IBM got clobbered to the downside for, almost – I can say every time, but damn near every time. Every time we had a position on, let's put it that way. So then the last time, IBM was down around 110 or 120, and the thing goes the other way. Like, it's up like $6 or $7. We didn't have the right strike then either. So yesterday, things trading like 145, and I go, okay, I'm going to do the 141 strike, because now that it's back up here, I think the thing will get clocked again, like it always does.
Yeah.
So, of course, I get talked out of it by my mavens here. And I end up doing a 143 strike. And where do you think the darn thing is? 141.
141 and a quarter.
140.87.
Okay.
So I think I still have a winner, but why do I listen to these? Whatever. Of course, not.
You know what? Trading by committee doesn't work worth a damn.
No. Well, of course, it's not
it
like
really it. It really doesn't. It. I mean, It really doesn't. I really feel like if you've got a feel for something, you just do it. You keep it to yourself. You don't go out on Twitter and talk about it. You just trade. I actually believe trading in a vacuum works better. I've worked at places where they tried to team people up because they thought, you know, two minds are better than one, but I just don't. I've never felt like that works. Now, there may be some people that works for.
But here's the conundrum.
You know, people that have worked together forever, you know, like Buffett and that other grumpy old guy he works with. That apparently works, but.
But here's a conundrum.
I think other people getting in your head does not help.
Well, here's the conundrum, Professor. If I were to ask you, statistics and game theory as you know it, and I'll even ask Mr. Weber because he's a. By the way, Matty, I'll talk about nothing has anything to do what we're talking about. They're now saying the guy that won the million and some dollars had a criminal record. So what? On Tiger.
What are you talking about?
The guy who won the broke the firm by putting 85 grand
yeah,
down.
Who cares?
Who cares? I don't know. You can't bet if you got a criminal record.
Right.
So, Professor, here's the deal. Now, when you go into, and this is be interesting for the listeners, I think. Normally, now you kick me from a distance. Normally, your best estimate of the price of anything is the current price, right?
Yeah.
Because all the king's men and all the king's horses are bidding, allegedly, in a free market for IBM stock, for this house, for whatever it happens to be, for corn, for wheat, for gold, you name it. So all those people collectively together, that knowledge would indicate that's why option pricing models only look at the price of the stock. They don't try and anticipate what the stock's going to be, stock price is going to be, because the best indication of where the stock price is going to be is where the stock price is, right? Mm-hmm. As amazingly as it may seem, even when Russell's hitting a golf ball, probably the most likely place for it to land is in the hole, even though it never goes there, right?
Right.
And it's not going to be behind you. You know, I mean, I've golfed my whole life without ever a hole in one, so it's hard to believe that. But the fact is, that's the most likely spot, right? I mean, even though you may hit the putt 8 feet to the right, it's probably not the most likely spot. You'll wonder, how did I get there, right? Anyway.
Yeah. But now it's the spot that you're shooting for. That's what you're saying in a roundabout way.
Right. So now when you do these earnings plays, the weird part is, Russell, I don't know if you've seen any of these, some of these stocks are so likely to move. They're like yesterday, IBM was trading at, like I said, it was trading at 145. Would $5, $6 every direction from 145, all the time spreads were the same price.
Sure.
So the market is essentially telling you that tomorrow, because of the earnings tonight, it's just as likely to be at 140 as it is to 150 as to 145. But me being not really a believer, I still think that the market has some knowledge. And even if it's a small advantage, the most likely spot for it to be tomorrow is where it's trading now. Because that is still the collective bet on where it's going to be tomorrow. So I always will easily be talked into getting closer to the strike. Because it seems like it's harder to be right 5 points away than it is even. Lately, it seems like it's almost within that range, within the straddle range. It's like a crapshoot, and I still think, Russell, that the collective wisdom of the market up to yesterday is still where it is. So, left to my own devices, I'll usually pick the strike that it's trading, thinking that the market has some knowledge, and lately it doesn't seem like they have much. So there. So counsel me on that, counselor.
Well, first, you've hit on something that I've done work on. It's been a while, but I actually, about 5 years ago, I went through three quarters where with every stock that had weeklies, and this is back when we only had about 120 or so stocks that had weeklies, and I bought the straddle or the strangle on the close. I bought it, or I priced it out. Both the straddle and strangle, it depended on where the stock went out relative to the strikes. That's the only reason that I would choose a straddle or strangle. I divided the differences up into thirds. So, and I went through and I tracked buying and then selling it the next day on the close, just across the board for, or just exiting either a straddle or a strangle, for all the earning, all the stocks that reported that had weeklies. And if you bought all the straddles or strangles, you lost money over the course of an earnings season. If you sold all the straddles or strangles, you lost money. It really came down to just about the bid-ask spread between buying or selling the straddle or strangle.
Well, that means it's mean.
So over the long term, what you just said is correct, that the market, I said trading by committee doesn't work, but I think the collective wisdom with respect to the magnitude, not necessarily the direction, but the magnitude of the earnings move that you're going to get is very correct. Now, there are outliers. There are always a handful of outliers every earnings season, and that's the one that catches everybody's attention on CNBC and all that kind of stuff. But basically going through, and this is something once I finish my PhD, I want to circle back and do again and then really write it up. But over the course of an earnings season, you're best off, and when you say a crapshoot, eventually, in the long run, when you're playing craps, the house wins.
I'm going to say it goes in cycles.
If you decided you want to do nothing but buy straddles or do nothing but sell straddles on across the board for everything that's got weeklies, you basically would lose out about equal to the cost of trading.
That's why when we used to trade the OEX, when that was the mm-hmm. I think that was the single best option product ever in the history of the world, because the bids and offers were so narrow, given the mm-hmm. size of the underlying. It was a $300 stock, and they were a 16th or an 8th, every one of them.
Yeah.
But here's my anecdotal, non-scientific response to what you just said. I think generally, and this is, again, not totally non-scientific, generally the sellers will win only because the retail people can't be sellers. And it's going to be a little skewed to the upside on the straddles. Because, mm-hmm. People know I manage money for a lot of people, and I do a lot of option trading. I would never, I guess I have, 20 clients where if I wanted to, they have enough money and the paperwork is all here and everything. I could sell an earnings straddle five times, and I got, $2 million in their account. I never do. I never would. It's just not something
If you have a directional opinion, there's something to do there.
But I will say Russell, this last week, uh-huh. especially in these bank stocks, some of the straddles uh-huh. have been like a dollar and a half. I came real close to buying those. I can do. Because as one of my buddies in the pit used to say, when you do one of those spreads where you buy them real cheap, he goes, just what you can lose and always lose it. But I would say up until when you were doing this stuff, my gut would say that over the last 30 years that the straddle sellers probably made out slightly better. But I'm going to say the last earnings go around, and this one, I'm not sure. It's only just started. The last go around 3 months ago. I bet if you bought them all, you're a big winner. There were all kinds. It wasn't just a handful. A bunch of them blew through the straddle like there was no tomorrow. I mean, there were stocks that moved like $40 where the straddle was 12
mm-hmm.
or 15. I mean, now the big winner this week would be this Netflix. Things up $8, and the straddle was like 25.
Yeah, that's one that always seems that's one that always seems to have an outlier move about once a year, and then the rest of them are not particularly good.
Yeah, I mean, if you were seller 25, you were a big winner.
You know what'll be interesting to see with respect to the bank stocks, and I'd already had this thought before we started talking about this today. I will guarantee you all those straddles are more expensive next quarter.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Hey, I have a question for you.
I bet.
Two questions.
There's just such short memories with respect to those things.
Two questions. There may be maybe a caucus tonight if you're around.
Okay.
With the Fed guys.
All right.
But I have a question for you. As I am one of the few Luddites left in the world that actually check out money supply numbers every week. Here's one that I cannot figure out. I suppose if I really dug. I should send this to my guys over there and see if they can figure it out. If you go to the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve System, Money Stack and Debt Measures, it's called an H6 release. I'm sure you've seen this thing. Well, there's a million numbers in here, but the ones I usually go to be cheap and easy. The guy says, I may be easy, but I'm not cheap, or something along those lines. Now get a load of this. There's the two cheater sections here. One is where it says 3 months. I look at that one, and I look at the 13-week. And they're usually off by, you know, maybe 1 or 2 percentage points. Now get this. This is from the end of last year. 3 months from December 18th to March 2019. So I guess they mean December 31st to March 31st, correct?
Yeah.
They have adjusted M2 up 3.4% on an annual basis, which I'm looking at that and go, wow, that seems really low because it's been a lot higher than that. Where did that one come from? Percent change at seasonally adjusted annual rates. Okay, now, but you drop down a little bit, and it says percent change at seasonally adjustable annual rates. Now, that would be the same thing, correct, Professor?
Yeah.
December 31st, the 13 weeks previous. So here's December 31st, 2018, 13 weeks. So we're looking from really to April 6th rather than March 31st, and it's 5.0. How could it be up that much in that 1 week to make an annual adjustment 1.6 difference? How could it possibly? Because I'm looking right at I'm looking right at the number here. M2 uh-huh. weekly average, it's between March 25th and April 1st.
It went from an annualized 3.
It's like five. No, it went up barely a little. So what it's telling me is somehow on that particular day, on March 31st, it had to be way lower than April 1st. How could that be? It had to be like you know a couple of billion dollars lower. How could that be in 1 day?
That's a conundrum. I can't even, you know, I'm thinking through the calendar real quick here. I'm thinking through all the different, that sounds like that's an answer that the people who have a pay grade at the Fed need to answer for us.
Because here's the numbers.
Because I can't, you know, and the first thing I would do is see if there's ever been a springtime anomaly like that before.
Well, they're saying the last day of March, March 31st, uh-huh. was $14,509,000,000,000. All right. Yeah, April 1st was $14,557,000,000,000. So it's up. How could it be up 55?
About half a billion or half a trillion dollars?
$55 billion in 1 day.
$55 billion in 1 day.
Yeah.
What if they? You know, I don't think they're supposed to be doing this much anymore. But what if they bought a bunch of bonds from banks and injected
50
cash
billion
into the system
in 1 day?
That way?
$50 billion?
That's nothing in the bond market, man.
Oh, well, I suppose.
Not really. It's not.
But even
we
that,
did our fixed income guy did a study recently on like just what the average bond trade is, and it's in the tens of millions of dollars. So that can add up very quickly.
But there must be more. There must be now. More to it because 3.4% is slightly expansionary. Because it'd be mm-hmm. like you like to think 3% is the number you want to stick to. This is back in Milton Friedman days. 5% is very expansionary. Especially when you got a growth rate of 2,
mm-hmm.
which I think most people are pushing. But hey, what do you make of it? I don't know if you listen.
I'm just trying to think. And then it's the end of the quarter. I'm just wondering if there. What's the? You've got me hung up on this one.
I figured I would.
The government payroll. Was there enough during the government shutdown that you're adjusting for that somehow?
Could be.
That's another thought behind it. Because I'm just trying to think what happened in that quarter that was different. And that's one of the things that maybe happened was maybe the government wasn't paying their bills.
Some of that
started to drop off as you started to move forward even just by a few days.
But 1 day seems a lot.
Yeah, but, you know. Yeah. You know what? Yesterday, the taxes are done and behind me, but I got paid yesterday, and you know, I got paid by my day job, and I also got paid by Loyola. And in the middle of the month, I only get paid by Loyola, so I get double paychecks on the 15th of every month. And what's in the bank today, or what was in the bank yesterday, and now what's going to be in the bank today are two very different numbers.
Email.
I paid a whole lot of bills very quickly.
To Robert McPee, Steph, not only is Russell coming tonight, he's buying.
Oh, yeah.
He said the number's
gone. No, that money's gone.
Oh.
You should have invited me yesterday.
How'd you manage to get rid of it in one day? Well, it's easy to do, by the way, to get rid of it in one day.
You know what? There's three women who always need things in this house who I love to death.
Oh, God.
And there are three dogs, Vet Bill 1, Vet Bill 2, and Vet Bill 3.
I'll tell you what, if you can find a reasonable vet these days, you have found gold.
So, Vet Bill the first, Vet Bill the second, and Vet Bill the third.
All right, I have a question for you, and I don't want to go through it again because we were talking about it earlier. We only have a couple of minutes to break, but then we have you up for that. But the alleged, according to Bloomberg, change in the Fed policy between we're not going to fight inflation until we see it has me shuddering because is it just...
Yeah, you don't do that.
Yeah. Is it just...
If you wait till you see it, especially with something like that, you're too late. And Fed action takes a while to work its way through the system.
If you take that to everyday living,
that's not the right approach. I'm with you on we need to have a diversity of opinions on the Fed, but there's certain logical things that we want the academics to be in there and say, no, you don't. That's not the way to act. And that's one that I believe all three, four, five, or six of Jerome Powell's predecessors would not agree to.
I don't want to be gross.
Y'all get together and write one big letter to Powell and say, no, you don't. This isn't what you do.
If I could take that to a gross personal hygiene thing, you don't take a shower until people 5 feet away can smell you.
That's not how it works, man.
No, it's not.
It's funny because I'm talking about... I'm talking about economic numbers today in one of my classes, and I'm going to work that one in right there.
As a economic historian, I'll just kind of prelude this in. I want to ask you because you actually have statistics on this history, and rather just memories like me. The last inflation bout we had, the big one in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
I was talking earlier about how savers came out relatively unscathed. And in fact, did pretty darn well, because your banks always seem to pay the inflation rate plus the real rate of interest. So, if inflation
was 12, you were able to get some decent rate.
And actually, later on in the mess, if you were certainly a union worker, you were able to get cost of living adjustments in addition to your raises.
Right.
If this happens again, I don't see either one of those things happening.
No. In the way that it happened before, because I think they probably regret it before.
Well, what I'm saying is, if all of a sudden now inflation is 8%, you're still getting 1% in your bank every year. That's essentially a currency,
basically a loss of close to 7%.
Well, it's the same thing as if you devalued your currency.
Yeah,
and if you're a borrower like the federal government is. Do you think they're being this sneaky, I guess is what I'm saying? I mean, if you were...
Oh, I actually think that's how they're going to get out of the debt trouble at some point.
Well, but they have a trick bag.
Right there.
Yeah.
I think they're going to inflate their way out of it.
Well, we always give Thomas as the butt of our jokes. If we devalue the currency by 50% and Thomas owed me $20, I guarantee you he would show up the next morning with the $20. without knowing full well that it's really worth 10 now. Right?
Uh-huh.
But I'm just giving him time as grief, but I'm using his name. SP Futures up 7.25, and NASDAQ Futures now up 35. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456, or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Mel Warman aboard, Mr. Russell Rhodes. SP Futures up 750. NASDAQ Futures up 3650. So we're off to the races there. We have the Dow up 35. It's only because IBM is down 467. It's now trading 140.47, right near the strike where I should have, but I don't. I'll still be all right where I am, but not as all right. DAX up 50 points, 0.4%. FTSE down 8, call it 0.1%. DAC round up 15.2, so they're not celebrating near as much in Europe as we are. Over in Asia, Nikkei up 56, that's 0.5%. Shanghai up 9, 0.3%. Hang Seng down 5, call that flat. Oil is up 35 cents, 33 cents in Brent. RBOB gas back up to 205. And we've got gold is now up $1.20, but still only 1278. The four-month low. All of a sudden, the China GDP claims that they're doing better over there. It's amazing to me how
a billion and a half people economy can go from being terrific to flat on its ass back to being terrific on a weekly basis. But somehow that's the sentiment. Hey, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still off to a pretty good start this morning. No issues coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Traffic building on the Eisenhower, but no accidents or issues to report. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. That fatal crash that happened overnight on the Tri-State right off of the Bishop Ford, that investigation is now completed, so that is opened. The two right lanes were blocked for the majority of the morning as they concluded that investigation, but that has been reopened, so that's good news from a sad news, obviously, but good news from a traffic perspective. One issue to report in the area right now is out west on the Eisenhower. On the inbound side at North Avenue, there's a stalled van in the left lane that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that, but everything else is looking great out there. Weather today, lots of clouds. I could see a little bit of sunshine this afternoon, but mostly cloudy throughout the day, and then we could have some showers, especially to the north side of the city and northern suburbs. South might avoid that rain, but we'll reach a high of 63. Warmer than that inland, could touch 70 away from the lake, but 63 downtown. Right now it is cloudy and 49 degrees at the lake. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 81 today. Right now it's mostly clear and 58. In sports, baseball teams are looking a little better this week. White Sox have now won 4 out of 5. They took care of the Royals last night on the south side. 5-1 was the final. Cubs have won 4 out of 5 as well. They won in Miami, shutting out the Marlins 4-0. That was Jose Quintana's second straight shutout of 7 innings pitched. And the Diamondbacks beat the Braves on the road. A nice win in Atlanta, 9-6. Chief.
Atlanta, pretty good this year. They are, aren't they?
Yeah. They won the division last year, and they're projected to win it again this year, although, you know, they're kind of hovering around 500 right now, but they have a lot of talent.
What's your feeling of the White Sox? We have to get Josh back in. I think by mid-season, their team in the field is going to be equal to a lot of people's. I don't know about their pitching, but they got some guys who can play this.
Oh, they have a lot of they did exactly what the Cubs did. They acquired a lot of young assets via the draft and via some trades, and they've essentially tanked and had some high picks. And now those guys are starting to make it to the big leagues. And their lineup, as they continue to get seasoned, is going to be just as good as anyone's, it looks like, at least on paper. But their pitching is going to be what does them in, and they're not expected to contend this year. So we'll see. But, you know, the Cubs weren't necessarily expected to contend in 2015, and they ended up getting really hot in the second half and won
a
wild card.
A lot of that was Arrieta.
Yeah, but they won 90 some games. That was a whole team effort, obviously.
But was he 22? What did he win?
Arrieta?
Yeah. It was over 20, I think.
It was probably over 20, I can find out.
Well, that's rare these days. I forgot what we're talking about because I'm digging through some Boeing numbers here. I was asking you some very important question before the break, Russell. Do you remember what it was?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I was digging through the Netflix projections.
By the way, Arrieta, Arrieta in 2015 went 22-6 with a 1.77 ERA.
That's a real year.
And it's one of the best. Won the Cy Young, obviously. He was sixth in MVP voting. And one of the best seasons by a pitcher in National League history. Certainly, probably the best ever in Cubs history.
How do you compare with Bob Gibson's year with the 1.2? Because now the mound is lower.
And yeah, I mean that's a good
and
good question.
I bet you Bob pitched more than 6 innings most games.
So did Arrieta.
Yeah. So I mean it's back then they. Yeah, you know how complete games are almost unheard of in this day and age.
You know what, Matty? Check innings pitched on Arrieta's 215 versus the year Gibson was 1.1 something something.
Yeah, Arrieta pitched 229 innings.
I'm gonna guess 33 Gibson starts. Was 250, but not that much more. I mean, it wasn't like that's a guess. Well, if you can check that. Hey, question then.
Go
ahead, Russell.
Oh, I was gonna say I remembered what we were talking about.
Right.
But you have a question.
Go ahead. That was more important. I was asking you about Boeing here in a minute.
Gibson's 1.12 ERA season in 1968. He went 22-9 with a 1.12, which is just insane. 304 innings pitched.
Wow. That's a lot.
Just a different era, obviously, too.
Yeah.
And he won the Cy Young, and he also won the MVP.
There can't be too many pitchers that have won the MVP.
No, there aren't.
I'm going to say less than 5.
I can probably look that up too.
Yeah.
It just sounds like all we're doing today is making Matt Google things.
Yeah, but you know, think of it as though he's so good at it, it's easy for him because he's really good at it. If it was me, okay. So all right,
multitasking. We were talking about ignoring inflation until it's in your face.
Yep,
that's a bad idea. We were talking about, which it has me very hung up. And then because if they're really going to behave like that, I'd be taking a look at buying the GLD ETF and putting it in my pocket and waiting until inflation surprises them. And then when inflation surprises them, about 3 months later, get out.
Well,
because it takes too long for Fed action to work its way through the system, especially, you know, they can do some things that might get, you know, employment going and maybe get growth growing, but I think it's more difficult for them to slow things down.
Do you think they can really...
And I would hate to believe that is actually, you know, that they're not going to react to inflation until they actually see it, not early. So I hope that means that when we see the early signs of inflation, and not when it, you know, when we definitely have like a 4% CPI or something like that.
You know what, Russell? I have one advantage on Milton Friedman is that I'm still alive. Other than that, he was a brilliant man.
You got more experience.
Well, I guess because I was
you have
able
more history to work. You have more history.
I have more
to
history
work
to work with.
Than
he did. Yeah. That's exactly right. I'm beginning to think that the more I've actually gone back and read some of the stuff of his that I read when I was in college. Boy, you put yourself to sleep easy with that, but you do learn with it. I don't know people. I think people give the Fed an awful lot more credit for changing things. It seems to me that you never want to. Obviously, if you're withdrawing credit at a time when there ought to be growth, you restrict the growth some, but not totally. And I think you actually just spread it out, Russell. I mean, in other words, I don't think you can actually kill it because people find alternate ways to do their
exactly exactly.
And I also don't think, and this is the part right now, I've disagreed with the last two or three Fed people. Just pouring money into a moribund economy where credit's not the problem doesn't really do you any good. But what it does do is it inflates asset prices and it benefits one class of society over another. And I think that these guys, the people have, I won't say the Trumpers, but the one percenters have figured this out. That even if it doesn't help anybody else, it really helps me.
Uh-huh.
And that's, You never really heard of that, you know, back, because what ended up happening back in the day, when you poured money in and the inflation went up, it actually torpedoed the market because the interest rates went up right with it and companies were gagging on interest rates. So
people would shift into or wouldn't be as inclined to take money out of a savings account or take it away from a bank and put it in the market.
Right, and
yeah,
so
it's kind of a double whammy there: bad for business and bad for the instruments that are based on business.
But I think that I'm starting to judge. How can I say this charitably? Because I'm charitable today. Judge the current administration, not just the current one, the one before, the one before that. What they really want to have happen? I mean, this would be your druthers, and it is in the same class as learning to swim but staying dry, which is very difficult to do. I think what they want, since they have a debt that they'll never pay back normally, they would love to see, they'd love to inflate the living bejesus out of the economy. So 10 years from now, you're paying people back with inflated currency. But you have to hide that fact from people because with all the checks you give out to, you know, Defense Department, retirees, and God knows what else, you have to lie. Otherwise, if you're paying out 10% more every year because that's your inflation rate, then you don't get anywhere. So you really want a very low published rate but really high real inflation because you're going in two directions. You want to have inflation because you're a debtor, right? But you don't want to have inflation because you're paying out to people. How do you get to both of those goals? And I think they're trying to do it right now. There is inflation, and they're telling you there isn't, right? You know? They're peeing on your shoes and telling you it's dry. You know, what can I say? I mean, right? I mean, it's something's wrong.
There's nothing on your shoe.
Yeah, there's nothing on your shoe.
Don't look here. Look over there.
Because something is seriously wrong here, correct? In my opinion.
Yeah. So, I think it's creeping up on us, but I'm going to take the other side on this one.
That's why you're here.
Everybody likes to beat up on the Fed. They really, you know, and since 2008, which, you know, they had a lot of fault for all of that, we've actually done pretty much okay. I'm not going to say everything has been perfect, but we haven't, you know, we've gone over 10 years now with pretty much consistent growth one way or another. I mean, we got sparked even more with the fiscal side, but on the monetary side, I don't think they've done a very bad job. Now, I think one of the biggest criticisms of the Fed is there's going to be some comeuppance day with all of this, and the longer we stretch it out, the worse it's going to be. But it hasn't hit us yet, so I feel like that's the biggest criticism.
But the question
is what's going to happen? But it hasn't seemed to happen yet.
Well, Russell, that was my point. The comeback from the 2008 fiasco, much of which was happened on their watch. That
happened on a lot. You can spread that blame on a lot of people,
right? But
they're at the front of the line.
So yes, did you have to make sure money went into the system to save the mutual funds and those kinds of things? The answer is yes. Mm-hmm. I've never once debated that. But what I'm getting to, and the more I read, and I keep digging deeper and deeper into this, they've essentially had a 7-8% rise in money supply to the point where they've totally torpedoed the federal funds market, and the point where they've poured more money back into these banks by paying them interest on money that other people give them for free. And so they've had a two-sided idea, is to pump up asset prices and to pump up bank assets. So what I'm saying is that this is hard to prove. You go back to the elephants in the zoo, right? Where the guy comes in, walks into the zoo, and he says, "Why are you painting the elephant's toenails pink?" Because that's when they break out of the zoo at night, we can track them down before they made it in downtown. I've never seen an elephant downtown. See, it's working. You know, I don't know how your argument versus mine. By the way, there's no way to know whether you're right or mine. I'm going to say that if they would have kept the money supply growth at 4%, never went below like 2% in the Fed's fund rate, and never had this big awash cash that they're paying interest for to a few banks at night. If they would have done none of that after 2009 and 10, we'd be in the same place and maybe even healthier because the assets would be priced better. I'm going to say it's hard to put your finger on.
When you say assets priced better, do you mean higher or
I'm going to say
or closer to a long-term fair value.
You wouldn't have junk bonds going at 6%, which I think are a bomb waiting to go off. Those kinds of things. I mean, I think you've
reached. You know what? The trading by committee, one of your guys over there that I had a discussion with has a good idea behind that. So.
Okay, well, what I'm saying, I don't think
and I agree with that one.
I don't think the extreme they went to, and this is impossible to prove. It's like saying, what if he didn't bunt? How well would he have done to make a baseball? I don't think that's done anybody any good other than a few people. To go to like 0% versus 2 or 1.75. I think you're such an extreme. None of that. And the thing that solidified this view in my mind, such as it is when I went back and actually did the study on credit card interest rates, that over the 9-year period where interest has been zero for regular people, credit card rates have gone up, not down. So none of it.
They have gone up.
Yeah, none of it is.
The offers that I don't, you know, I got the card that I use and it's fine. But the offer, I've noticed that the offers I'm getting are kind of high. In fact, you know, Apple came out with proposed their own credit card. The interest rate on that thing is ridiculous.
Yeah. So
they're hoping people will overpay to have a cool card. Maybe they will.
Well, I'm saying none of this stuff.
If you do that, you're an imbecile. if you overpay for an Apple credit card, that's insane.
Well, come
on. You know what? There are the Apple diehard. You know, wear black turtlenecks on the day Steve Jobs died. People that will do that to have one.
Oh, I know.
I'm going to lob in
the
there.
The ones that have the Apple sticker on their back window of their car.
Exactly. Well,
which is weird.
How many? What percentage of people, and I'll lob this one out there, you guys. By the way, Matt, you took a horrible shot last night when I was talking.
For what?
When I was talking to young Emma, who's a DePaul lady, and I said, "Well, Matt Weber used to be the voice of the young people," and she goes, "How old is he?" And I go, 35. Well, he's too old to be that now.
Well, yeah, thanks.
I'm
probably true.
So where do you see her?
I can remember a time when people didn't have cell phones or internet. So that's that makes me old.
That makes you a little bit older.
Yeah, in fact,
you can be young at heart.
That's right.
Well, since you still have a pulse, if you were to see her, probably the first thing that pops into your mind isn't, "I'm too old for her." Just saying. I mean, you know, it's hard to say what, because everything you do at the extremes, I think you cause. And going back on it, you know what else I think, Russell? Another one I can never prove. I think that Volcker was just as guilty on the back end of inflation as these. I hope I'm not true when I say this. These mopes are on the front end, because in the 6 months that he was there, the last 6 months that he was squeezing the living gonads I think inflation was already gone, but because it's such a lagging indicator through the system, it was still showing up. Even though you looked around, there wasn't any.
It was already on the downtrend.
It was already on the downtrend, and I think he could have done what he did, and possibly saved most of the savings and loan industry, which I think we're missing to this day.
As an alternative, yes, we are.
And I think he was just as heavy-handed on the backside as maybe inattentive these guys are on the front side. Hey, but I got a Boeing question for you. We don't normally talk about individual companies because we don't ever give recommendations, but these guys are somewhat in a world of hurt here. And I've never really seen anything like this at this scale, Russell, in my entire career. I mean, these guys, we're not talking about when the 787s got grounded. And I'm going to guess at the time the delivery mate, and I could be wrong, if there's no one knows more about Boeing than me, it was early in the 787 deal, and I think they might have been maybe delivering five a month, six, something like that, and the thing was grounded for what? 6 weeks maybe? Nothing crashed. We're talking about fires internally with some battery that was no good, right? Something like that?
Yeah.
Well, this thing...
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't a major structural issue, which I think the MAX has a huge design flaw.
Well, but let's say, yeah. Without going into that, which
that was an easier fix. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, but the run rate, these guys are producing 57 a month of these things. 57.
Yeah,
and then I've cut back to 42. Now,
have you ever been out to that place?
No, I understand it's like as far as the eye can see.
It is one of the most incredible. I'd been there once on my own, and then I was out in Seattle, and I made my kids go, and they were so peeved they had to go, but then they were awestruck at what they do out there.
Oh, it's
it's like building a building, but moving the building as you build it.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially assembly line, right?
It is. They're running, you know, 24-hour shifts, and they just kind of move these things through the process. They just kind of keep shifting them forward. It's just amazing.
All right, well, speaking of the 24, that's what I want
to
ask
you. At that point, having seen what they do to start over would be a huge task in its own right.
Well, I'm sort of getting
there. Not like they shut the assembly line down and retool something. I think they actually have to back everything out of there and start over.
The term is retrofit.
Well, it's a retrofit at Boeing is much different than a retrofit at an auto factory.
Yeah, except I think whatever they're doing is in the cockpit. They're not pulling wheels off.
Well, it seems to me that it's a software thing that you have to adjust for a design of the plane that's different than any other.
Correct.
But is it a 787 or 737?
737.
I can't remember which one it
is.
And what they're and the way that I read into it is they basically should change the shape of the plane a little bit to assure that these type things don't happen again?
That's not going to happen at this point.
Well, that I think if you were going to, the impression I have, and God knows I'm, you know, I spent 6 weeks in engineering and then said I don't want to do this, and switched over to finance. But it seems to me that the best and most correct fix is to redo the shape of the plane.
You have any idea?
Like, I know. No, I know. I know what I just said, and I know what would be involved in that. And like I said, I've been out there and I've seen what would be involved in that.
But nobody is.
And I think they're going to try to avoid that. I would try to avoid that from a business standpoint as well.
From what Lewis told me, from what I understand, there isn't a pilot around that couldn't hop in this thing tomorrow and fly the thing manually with no problems.
Yeah, they had a couple of guys that worked for Southwest that were willing to do it.
And so we're talking about...
since this problem, and then they had to turn around and go back.
Well, I think the fix will be, instead of having one of those things on the outside, they'll probably add another one. The attitude tells you what attitude you're at. And they'll probably... Anyway, what I'm saying is, I just wasn't going to go... I was not prepared to go as deeply as you are. By the way, thank you for doing that. But I'm going
no
through...
No problem.
Well, I'm saying... Okay, but, you know, we did this... the reason why I'm into this is because I put together at Pullman, we did these Amtrak kind of cars, ones you're still driving around, the double-deckers. Those were all done at Pullman.
Cool.
And so I was there when the first one was delivered and, you know, that kind of thing. And I ended up doing we ended up having something happen just Pullman, just like essentially at Boeing, where the thing got delayed by changes. They weren't in the field anything wrong with them. They just, Amtrak kept making changes. Pullman had all these people working and they kept falling behind. And really didn't have the software or the knowledge at the time to realize how much a day lost was once you're producing that level of cars. It wasn't like you were, mm-hmm. you're doing five or six cars for a custom train, which didn't make any difference. You know, anyway, it was a big deal. And I was involved in that. And as a matter of fact, the thing was, get a load of this, Russell, and I'm not going to pat myself on the back. My controller said, you know, you can do this better than most. Let me know exactly where this contract's going to come in terms of profit and loss. And at the time, they were officially break even with all the auditors. So I spent 2 weeks on the project, and I came back, and he said, how many copies do you have? And I said, one. He says, well, give it to me. And I actually did have a copy of myself, so I might have lied. But I never showed it to anybody. I still have it. He said, how much money are we going to lose? And I said, we're going to lose $240 million. His pipe literally dropped out of his mouth. He was a sweater pipe guy. He goes, don't tell me that.
Okay.
I said, I went at it three different directions. All the old guys tell me this is how they calculated stuff. It's old, but it worked. I went into labor hours on the fifth car, all kinds of things in manufacturing engineers. No matter every which way I did it, I came up with the same number.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up getting a $40 million, because Amtrak had not signed the extension yet for the lounge cafe cars. You see those things around with the bubble in them? Those are the lounge cafe cars. They had not signed through their inattention, they had not signed that contract. So Pullman beat up on them for another $40 million. They lost exactly $200 million. I was within basically $1,000. And this was before the first car was delivered. So mm-hmm. I'm pretty good at how much... But I'm going to say that these guys have dropped from 57 a month at Boeing that they're not selling. Now, they get paid when they don't. There's no prepay on this stuff. They get paid for the plane.
No, they get paid just like when you sell a car.
And so they dropped to 42 a month. And I've got this list price on these things is $128 million. So what's the regular price? 110, say? I mean, I got to believe there's a discount. So say 110. What do you suppose Boeing's margin is?
I really couldn't even venture a guess.
All right, I'm being charitable. I'm saying $80 million a plane is their cost, okay?
Okay.
Times 42 per month that you're not delivering, that's $3.4 billion a month that basically are sitting out in the parking lot. Now, you got to pay to store them. Somebody's got to open the doors during the day. I think they're flying some of them someplace to store them, like in the desert, which has got to cost.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be lawsuits on... How many months, even Boeing, as big as they are, at $4 billion a month, let's say, plus
how
players.
Long can you go with
how long can you
that?
Go? Can you go with that? And I'm going to say June, July, easy. If we're talking mm-hmm. next April, I don't know. Are they that big?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, can they take that kind of a hit?
I don't think so. Eventually, and I don't beyond just delivering those planes. I'd have to look at how much is that a part of their overall business.
Because
they do other things.
Right. Well, the commercial aviation is commercial. Somebody must know. Is commercial aviation is roughly half, right?
Okay.
I think 55%. Because they do a lot from the federal government. But this plane is well over half of their cash flow. It's got to be.
Yeah. And you're going to lose your mind at what I'm getting ready to say, and that we're running out of time.
Yeah.
But the government can't let them go out of business.
Well, that's right. SP Futures up 8. That's interesting. We'll talk about that next week. NASDAQ Futures up 40. Hey, if you're around, come see us. We'll be back tomorrow on Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.